Well, greetings. Whoa, stop that. Sorry about that. Too many things doing this really fast. Real quick, if everything looks different, it's because it is what I'm doing right now, and Rich is probably mad about this, but hey, I decided to go as minimal as I could. What would be the minimal amount of setup just to get a program done? Not dragging everything out, because it's 8:40 p.m. Here in where I am, and it's been a very long day, over 6 hours of driving, and not across the most scintillating landscape of Western Texas. Along the 10, everybody who knows that route knows exactly what I'm talking about. Not much to keep your attention along that section. But anyway, so I've been really, really busy since I got here, and I've actually got a bunch of stuff done. Very proud of myself. I've fixed a couple things. Again, this is a shakedown trip with the new RV. It's doing great, but there are things that you need to adjust to, and you know, things that, you know, screws that fall out that always do in any RV because you're bouncing down the road and you know how to fix those things. Anyway, so I wanted to get a program in. But I also wanted to be able to go to bed once I get done, because I'm back on the road tomorrow, driving through San Antonio. Actually have arranged to have lunch with a pastor in San Antonio tomorrow. I just noticed the camera is a little bit of an angle. Just threw this together as quick as I could. I don't even have any lights up. I'm only using ambient light in the room. That was just one thing to... all sorts of things, trying to make it as quick as possible. So anyway, here we are. And what I'm going to ask is, Rich may go, nope, I can't do that. But my understanding is there is some chat channel thing that goes along with the video on Twitter. And so I'm going to basically, if there's stuff that Rich sees in the chat thing that he'd like to send to me in Signal, I will try to interact with stuff there. I'll also be watching Twitter itself for maybe some questions and things. I have a few things I want to talk about, but I thought, hey, it's evening time, even back in my part of the United States. This weirdness of daylight savings time is just so strange. I don't understand it at all. I don't get it. It's so dumb. But anyway, I'm experiencing it as I'm driving eastward. Also, quick reminder, very important reminder. The debate, well, I got way too much headroom on that. Nothing I can do about it, right? Well, actually, there probably is something I could do about it. Watch this, folks. This is how you mess everything up live on the air, okay? Well, that didn't really mess things up too badly. That wasn't too bad, given it was all done through software. We'll live with that one. Anyway, for the debates next week in Livingston, Louisiana, there is a link at the front page at aomin.org. If you're coming, you need to get a ticket. And that's just simply so you know how many people are coming. That's so you don't have 300 people show up and they're disappointed because they can't get in because there's limited seating. It's not, oh, look at the people trying to make all that money. Nobody's making a bunch of money off stuff like this, I assure you. So if you haven't gotten your ticket, I think there's about 140 spots left, I think is what I was told today. And there are two debates, of course. So I'm starting to wonder if maybe the tickets are for both debates. I'm not sure. Follow the link at aomin.org and make sure to get that taken care of. I don't want people traveling, you know, a couple states and then they can't get in or something like that. I doubt that's going to happen, to be honest with you. What we discovered in Houston was 75%, maybe, of the people who purchased tickets, they put money out. Only about 75% showed up. So I'm sure there will be extra room left because you just get a smaller percentage. That's why airlines oversell planes, you know, the tickets for the planes, because there are people who just don't show up. That's why they end up having to give free tickets away and stuff like that. But anyway, so make sure to do that. If you want to be at the debates with Jimmy Akin on Sola Scriptura and on how a man has peace with God. So, in other words, redoing the Sola Scriptura topic again. This will be different. You can't blame me. This is the fifth time. And, you know, take the gloves off. I'm going to be responding specifically to his presentation, specifically to his assertions about what the paradigm was in the early church, the equivocation that is involved in trying to say that anything in the primitive church is the same thing as the magisterium today. No. Newman understood you have to come up with a wild and crazy way around that. The development hypothesis, absolutely necessary to try to make that connection. And then, of course, has man of peace with God? What is justification? Was Abraham justified multiple times? Is that not an argument against Paul? Which it actually is. That'll be some of the stuff that'll be coming up in the second debate. So looking forward to that and hope you can make that. I think it will be live on Facebook. Of course, it will be being recorded for high quality uploading at a later point. But the resolution on the live stream will be not what it will be once we put the nice version of it up at a later point. Okay. I've sort of feel like I've been out of things. It's not that I haven't been completely disconnected from what's going on in the cyber world. But when you're spending 5 to 7 hours a day playing tag with semi-tractor trailers, and when you're almost the same size as a semi-tractor trailer now, it does diminish your social media participation, shall we say. And so I wanted to comment. I had the opportunity today to listen while driving. There's a lot of stuff that I have queued up to be listening to while driving. Most between now and the debates relevant in that area is, but there's stuff I want to get to on other topics on the way back for future discussion. But I had the opportunity today while driving to listen to the entirety of Doug Wilson's appearance on the Tucker Carlson show. And I have to admit, it's really interesting to me. I really wonder where Tucker is these days. Exactly what is he thinking, and where does he stand? He seemed fascinated by Doug's discussion and positions and things like that. I'd love to see, you know, find out that, you know, he believes in these things and, you know, stuff like that. Who knows? I don't have any inside information on anything like that. But it was a very, very interesting conversation. And I only got to hear it today. So there's been a lot of talk about it for the past couple of days. And it's really sad, honestly. Well, Okay, I apologize. Everything worked fine until you start trying to live stream. Sort of surprises me, but it could just be the time of day. So I'm going to cut the live stream. We'll just record, get it uploaded as quick as we can. My apologies for that. That always bums me out. It happens. We've got to find a way around this. We've got to find a better way to connect to the internet. Well, we're working on that. We're working on that. So I'll stop this and talk about that in a second. So we are working on getting away from this. We've been using a modem, and I've always hated it. That's just all there is to it. It doesn't allow you to hook up stuff. I just always liked the original setup that we had, but sometimes it's bulletproof, but there are times when it's not even close. And like I said, we're gonna have Starlink as a backup, and we've had to upgrade what that is so that it can hook into the system we're gonna install in this thing, and hopefully that'll make a difference. I think it will. But you're still using cellular stuff like that, and especially at nighttime, that can be an issue. So, anyways, my apologies for that, and that also means I won't obviously be able to be watching stuff on Twitter. Anyway, back to the subject. All sorts of people had already commented on Doug Wilson being on Tucker Carlson talking about Christian nationalism. And all the usual suspects who have already staked out their claims for opposition to Christian nationalism, support of Christian nationalism, taking a middle ground and saying, well, you know, I recognize the difference between what Doug Wilson is saying and what Stephen Wolfe is saying, and there are fundamental theological differences there, all that kind of stuff is, you know, sort of, everyone's already staked their claims. There are people who, you know, we've said it before, and it's just sadly true, who suffer horribly from Doug Wilson derangement syndrome. It wouldn't matter if he went on Tucker Carlson and triggered a national repentance. They would still be angry and refuse to be involved with it or anything like that. And so, anyway, putting all that stuff aside, I was just... I was disappointed with many people, many Christians, who couldn't watch that, or at least listen to it. I listened to it. Who couldn't listen to that interview and go, isn't it fantastic that a Christian minister is having an opportunity on that program with that audience to be able to present the claims of Christ as the crucified and risen Lord and Savior, enthroned in heaven, proclaiming forgiveness of sins, being able to identify. I thought it was so wonderful that, you know, Carlson's a sharp guy, and he had caught that Doug had said a number of times, America's arrogance would properly lead to America's judgment. And so, and I'm not even sure if we're still on, because now the cash says okay. So I'll wait to see if Rich texts me and says, hey, it recovered. I tried to hit off, But now that it's the cash says we're good. So, hey, I'm recording, whatever. We'll see what happens. But a number of times Doug had said, you know, America's arrogance. And so he's like, what exactly has America done to demonstrate arrogance? What's the sin that you refer to over and over again? And Doug nailed it. Secularism. Secularism is an affront to God. It is a denial of the Christian faith in its fullness. Next year at the Fight, Laugh, Feast thing, I think it's in, well, it's in, here in Texas somewhere. I'm one of the plenary speakers, and my topic is, it's what does America need to repent of? Secularism. So he's talking about the very subject that I'm going to be addressing next year, along with him and others. So I'm like, yeah, nail this. And he's laying out just how destructive and just self-defeating secularism is. And there's just so many Christians that could not rejoice that in this unusual context, these incredible truths were being proclaimed. And I feel badly for people who cannot rejoice in that situation. You know, people who live in Europe, people who live overseas, live in countries that have great animosity toward Christianity, they look at something like that and they say, why aren't you people rejoicing that the Lord is providing such an incredible opportunity like this for so many people to hear something that they really do need to hear? But there's just so many people that are already so invested in staking out their little area that, we're not going to. It doesn't matter what good things he said. There's this over here. There's that over there. And it's just sad. And so I had even said on Twitter before I got a chance to watch it, I had only seen the little 8-9 minute summary thing that I think Canon Press initially had put out. But, you know, I had tweeted out, look, people, I said, I love Doug. Unlike the vast majority of his critics, I actually know him. One of the topics that came up that Tucker seemed to be so fascinated by was Doug mentioned the Sabbath dinner tradition that they have up there in Moscow. And Tucker just seemed like, how do you even do that? That's just, I almost imitated him there. How do you even do that? I almost got the voice right. And I'm one of the relatively small number of people in America that has been to Sabbath dinner with Doug and his family and people from the church. They may remember that one because I brought my solar telescope and set it up in the backyard so that as the sun was going down, all the kids could get to see the surface of the sun, sunspots and stuff like that through a solar telescope there at the Sabbath dinner. And, had a great fellowship, great time together. And then, interestingly enough, Doug and I ended up, don't know how it started. It was not the intention of either one of us, but we ended up having a fairly lengthy conversation, not a debate, but a fairly lengthy conversation on textual critical issues. He and I have engaged each other three times in writing on that particular subject. And I'm really hoping that someday we will be able to do that in person. Though, actually, I'd rather just convince him of my position first, so we don't even have to do that. But so I've been to the Sabbath dinner that I got the distinct feeling Tucker Carlson will be attending. I hope so. In fact, let me just look you straight now. Every single one of you was criticizing Doug and, oh, this is terrible. Don't you think it would be a good thing for Tucker Carlson to fly to Moscow, Idaho soon, you know, in the next couple of weeks, and attend Sabbath dinner, and then, you know, attend services at Christ Church? You don't, you think that'd be a bad thing? Seriously, how can you not rejoice at the possibility of something like that happening? I guess some of you, again, I have such an advantage over you. I've preached at Christ Church twice. The Lord's doing a wonderful work there. Do I agree with everything? Thank God they don't require me to. And I wouldn't, and it would be really weird if the only people I could work with are people that were exactly, believe exactly what I believe, because then I don't know that I'd have any fellowship with anybody. Ugh. There should be rejoicing that Tucker Carlson's like, that's fascinating. I'd like to see what, come on over. That's going to, I could just tell when I heard that. That's going to happen. And I rejoice. I truly rejoice that that's going to happen. I would love to see Tucker Carlson get a deep, firm grounding in the Christian faith. And if that comes through Doug Wilson, I have no problem with that at all. And if you do, I just want to look at you and go, as I said over and over again, I like the way Doug Wilson does it better than the way you don't do it. You know, he's out there doing it while you're sitting in the back row sniping at him, but you ain't doing anything else, so shut up. Oh, my goodness. It just frustrated me to be seeing all the childish sniping back and forth and back and forth that was going on. It was just, it was frustrating. Anyway, so the discussion was really, really interesting. Went a lot of different directions, but look, if you've listened to the Sweater Vest Dialogues that Doug and I have done, you've already heard most of what Doug had to say. We've discussed these things, and we've discussed the reality that from his perspective, from my perspective, there has to be a theological reality of a massive work of the Spirit of God to bring about any kind of change to where this nation would desire as a nation to please God, which is what is needed. That's what the nation needs. It will destroy itself. Other than that, it's had too much light to wallow in the darkness of secularism. Is going to bring destruction. There just isn't any way around it. So I really hope that a lot of folks will move past their tribalism and be able to sit there and go, okay, I may not like what Doug does here, Doug does there, but man, what a neat thing that he had the opportunity to do this and stepped up and proclaimed the Lordship of Christ and proclaimed the resurrection, proclaimed salvation by grace through faith in Jesus Christ alone. And that's great. Yeah, but you know, 14 years ago, he said, oh, shut up. Ugh, stop it. Just so tired of it. Now, as I said, I've been in Doug's home. I've been at Sabbath dinner, I've preached at the church, I've spoken at conferences, he and I have eaten taco time together, which is a really special thing. But we've also debated each other a number of times. Last time I was in Moscow, we did a debate. And we debated back in 2004 in Los Angeles. And so we disagree and we debate the disagreements. And so it's not overly shocking that something that came up did make me go, and it was interesting. It didn't seem, I get the feeling there's something behind this for Tucker, and I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it was the issue of children. And of course, you know, in Moscow, you've got Covenant Children, and, you know, we've had all sorts of discussions, and not even the debate topic of pedo communion and stuff like that. That really wasn't what was relevant here. What was relevant was the idea, and Doug and I haven't discussed this specifically, and he did say that there needs to be an analysis of the situation, in each situation, and there could be situations where this isn't the case, but I got the feeling that Doug takes the position that if you're that all your children not only need to make a profession of faith, which in a paedo-baptistic context is different than in a Baptist context, but that if one of your children goes off the rails, that you become disqualified to serve as an elder in the church. And so that would be a specific understanding of the qualifications. And evidently, he's written a book on it. I haven't seen it. I wrote a paper late 1990s at the request of the elders at Phoenix Reform on this topic as well. And so the issue is what pistis means and the parallel between Timothy and Titus. And I'm not going to go into the whole thing right now. In fact, I'm pretty certain that we've done that on the dividing line before. Fairly certain about that. But I just got the feeling, and the idea that all children born to Christian parents are necessarily, as a result, going to be of the elect is really concerning to me. It's interesting that paedo-baptists will point to old covenant examples to establish paedo-baptism, except here they can't. David, Absalom. I mean, there are so many righteous kings that have unrighteous offspring. There just doesn't seem to be, in the Old Covenant, this faithfulness, consistency within the covenant. And that's the covenant that they're trying to say, well, that covenant, the regularity of the covenant signs there is what comes into the New Covenant. It's like, well, it didn't result in continuous faithfulness, did it? It didn't. And then you look at the example of the New Testament, and you don't have, in the New Testament, generations of Christians being discussed because the New Testament documents are written very early on, obviously. But you do have the apostles, and they had spiritual offspring that went south, that went off the reservation. Paul names names. Demas. And these were people who were involved in apostolic work. They were involved in preaching and teaching. They were part of the apostolic band. They leave. They go back to the world. Does that mean Paul became a non-apostle? It's pretty obvious. John had that happen. 1 John, they went out from us, so it might be demonstrated they're not truly of us. Why doesn't that have the same impact? I would think that people who've made a specific profession of faith and then leave. That's far more relevant and important than someone who receives some type of sacramental sign when they're 8 days old or a couple weeks old and then never lives up to it. I see a huge difference between those two. So, you know, I was listening to that and I was listening to that discussion going, okay, you know, there's one of the big differences between Reformed Baptists and Reformed Paedo Baptists, I guess would be the term, in regards to what quote-unquote covenant children are, what that might be, things along those lines. So, you know, it's an area we have discussed. I've discussed it on Cross Politic, especially last year with the Baptists are responsible for transgender insanity, and that kind of stuff. And I don't think we'll ever be able to stop talking about it. I wish we could. I get tired of it personally, but that's the price we pay for being able to have fellowship and work together in the gospel. It means we have to keep talking about the things that divide us. And so there you go. I, again, very thankful for Doug's faithfulness, his willingness to go into that situation and to answer the questions and to answer the tough questions and to save the world. As he said, there is no political solution that's going to save this country. We're that messed up. It's only a theological solution. And you know, there's Russell Moore's never going to do that. He's nope, not going to do that. So it's great when someone's willing to step up and do that. And Tucker Carlson's like, how come there are only like three of you? And I appreciated the fact that Doug's response was, "There's, you know, there's 7,000 that haven't bowed the knee to Baal. They just don't have the popularity. They don't, you know, the media's not going to talk about them, that kind of thing." And so he didn't say, "Yeah, it's just us and one or two people elsewhere," something like that. He didn't do that. He said, "No, there's you know, Christ has his people and Christ has his faithful shepherds. They're out there doing their thing, and he's exactly right. That's exactly the way it is." So it was well worth listening to. And when you think for just a moment about what normally fills the airwaves, what normally fills popular programming, we've got to rejoice when the gospel is given an opportunity to be presented and things like that. You just have to. You have to. And again, I feel sorry for people who just couldn't. They're just too narrow in their thinking to rejoice when something like that happens. So we will see what comes of that. And like I said, I don't have the details in front of me. I'm sorry. Again, I threw all this stuff together real quick. But I know you can go to the Fight Laugh Feast website and it's not San Antonio. It's not Houston. Oh, it's Fort Worth, isn't it? One of the big cities in Texas. there are a number of them. Is where the big conference will be, I think. Is it the end of October? I think it's toward the end of October. We'll see. I obviously have to. Wait a minute, is that this year or next year? I think it's this year. Yeah, So that's actually, I need to find out fairly quickly. I need to start making reservations for RV parks because that's how you get, I get where I'm going. Man, there were a lot of other things, and I was really hoping, sadly, to have stuff from the channel to chat with people about on the program. Let me just do one other thing, and we'll call it good and get this uploaded and go from there. I am out in the middle of nowhere, so. But I got really, really good. I got really good results on the test, but speed test means nothing in regards to the reliability of the stream for doing data transfer. It's a more of a burst thing. I did just want to make one other comment because, unfortunately, the time's passing by and people stop thinking about these things. Our memory, collective memory, is very short, unfortunately. But a few weeks ago, in response to a question, so again, it's not some official pronouncement. It's not a papal decree. But Francis, in talking about two homosexual men or two homosexual women, I guess, in a relationship, talked about their living out their love. And he has repeatedly said that he supports the idea of civil unions that are not marriages. We all know that in every situation that's resulted in marriages eventually. It's the same thing. But the issue is that the Pope of Rome does not have a biblical concept of love. Now, that says a lot about Francis and Rome and Rome's claims and all that stuff. It does. But he's not the only one. He's not the only one. What I am seeing in counseling, in answering questions, we, within what I would refer to as the faithful Reformed Evangelical Church, are not doing the job we need to do to communicate and to counteract the world's consistent perversion of what love means. Now, you could write books about this, and people have. I love big band music. And really, big band music is the first, you know, there's some really old jazz recordings from the 20s, but, you know, the first music that was really recorded and broadcast and you could have them on 45s and 78s. Bet you've never seen one of them. And then eventually the 33s, the LPs, you know, are coming up on a century now since that started happening. And I'll listen to Glenn Miller and Artie Shaw and Tommy Dorsey and all that kind of stuff. And I'll listen to the lyrics. And there is already a really strong sentimentalism. And this goes centuries earlier than that, into the Romantic period and things like that. So I'm not saying that we've only recently developed an unbiblical doctrine of love. it's been a process. But when you join an unbiblical doctrine of love with secularism, that's when everything gets turned upside down. So we are being told, and with the threat of the force of law, that we have to embrace the idea that two men, or three men, or four men, or 10 men, or four women, or whatever, there's really no reason to say two, but using that two men who are throwing off the natural relationship with women and are embracing a narcissistic definition of love. They're falling in love with a mirror image. There is something very important scripturally in the phrase etzer kenegdo, a helpmeet suitable to him. The phraseology refers to someone who is similar yet different, as a woman is to a man or a man is to a woman. And that those two men are rejecting the need for an etzer kenegdo, and instead are saying, I can find all that I need in a mirror image of myself. That's narcissism. And we are being told that we must accept that kind of relationship and call it loving. And right now, I would say the vast majority of professing Christians in the United States, Europe, accept the world's assertion at that point and say, yeah, that's a loving relationship. Even if they say, I don't think it's a proper relationship, they will say it's a loving relationship. And once you say it's a loving relationship, you're going to have a really hard time explaining why it's not a proper relationship. But be it as it may, you would think that especially Orthodox believing, evangelical, apologetically minded Christians would have thought through very carefully what love really is and how we even define it. Instead, what you hear is, well, God is love. And what people do is they import into that all these emotions and feelings so that God becomes just the biggest mushy, gushy, sentimental creature on the planet. And that's clearly not how God's love is manifest, how it operates. Think about the demonstration of God's love in Scripture. Is in the sending of the Son, His self-giving, and His rising again and being enthroned in heaven, and God demonstrates His love toward us, and that while we're yet sinners, Christ died for us. Okay. From our perspective, when we receive from God, we see these things. But when you look at the big picture, God's love is demonstrated in His own self-glorification. And look at the process that God used to bring Christ into the world. It involved the rise and fall of nations. It involved a lot of people coming under His wrath to express His love. We tend to just so focus upon one aspect of Christ's, of God's character, that we don't see how they fit together. The beauty, I think one of the things that we're going to be spending eternity doing is looking at and coming to contemplate and understand the depth of the consistency of the attributes of God and how they have worked together in ways we can't see in this life because we have so little knowledge of everything that's going on. Once we can see the big picture of what God was doing cosmically, I think we're just, you know, to say we're going to be blown away is to once again demonstrate that language is insufficient. And I think the depth of what love really means and how shallow our modern Western conception of love is will be seen very clearly, but primarily in eternity. Primarily in eternity. Last week, that fellow in Austin, the graduate of Dallas, posted a picture of himself with two homosexuals that he had just profaned marriage with. He said he performed their marriage ceremony, but the only marriage ceremony that a Christian minister can perform is one that Jesus would command, and Jesus said from the beginning he made them male and female. That's the only relationship that God blesses. And so all he had done was he had profaned marriage and had confirmed these two rebel sinners in their rebellion to their own destruction as well as his own. And yet, my point is, there's so many people in the church today that would look at that and look, everyone's smiling and everyone's happy and you know, can't you just see everybody loves each other? And they're not thinking biblically. They're not thinking as if God has spoken. They're thinking only as if God has emoted, not as if God has spoken. And the idea of conforming our emotions and thinking to God's standard, not central for a lot of people who call themselves Christians. And it needs to be, and it should be. So once again, I apologize. None of what we could do, and no, it didn't have anything to do with how I set things up. There's a modem sitting over there. I think sometimes where it's sitting has an impact on things. But the simple fact of the matter is, when we switch over to the new system in here that we're going to be using, if they don't want us to send that back, I'm going to do some target practicing with it. I've never liked it. I've never trusted it. 90% of the time when my phone tries to hook up to it, I have to turn Wi-Fi off and go another way. So it's just never worked for me and didn't work for us tonight, unfortunately. I really wish it had. I really put some effort into get everything put together, and did give me at least an idea of what the minimal setup looks like and about how long it would take to get it set up. So I'll get better at it as time goes by. And Rich has done a great job. I hope everyone understands. When you see the debates next week, and I'm excited about them, I think they're going to be very useful and very helpful. But when you see those debates, you know, I hope you always recognize, and Rich and I recognize this, we couldn't be doing any of this without you, those of you who support this ministry, that make it possible for us to do this, for me to travel. But realize, Rich has worked very, very hard over the past couple of weeks. Once we made the decision, we're forced into the decision to get this new unit, you know, he just dives into it and is just working. And not only this stuff here with the ATEM and the cameras and getting all that so that I can set it up with some level of functionality, but all sorts of other stuff. You know, he's he's on the net, and, you know, he'll say, hey, you know, texted me while I was driving yesterday or the day before yesterday. Got answers on the, this unit has a built-in vacuum cleaner system. And I'm sitting here going, I don't want to really use it because I don't know where the bag is. Has it ever been cleaned out? How do we switch it? I don't know. And so, you know, I'm driving down the road and the phone rings. Yeah, got answers. Okay, this is what you got. And the bag is at this location. And, you know, I get to the next fuel stop or rest stop or something like that. And I'm looking there going, okay. And then when I got to the place, I, oh, there it is. And out come the bag. And no, it had never been changed. All of a sudden, it worked a whole lot better once you put a clean bag in there. It's great. But stuff like that, you know, he probably already knows more about this unit than he wants to know. Just simply looking stuff up and going in forums and asking questions. He just spends a tremendous amount of time and energy so that I can go do these things. So when you see these debates happening, if you listen in to the stuff from prior, after the stuff in Louisiana, when I'm speaking on the atonement, I got to these places. You all provide the financial ability to pull up to that big old diesel pump and fill it up and keep on moving. But Rich just does so much of the stuff in preparation. Once we get going, then I got to do stuff. And I have. I figured out the power issue. And like I said, I was fixing some stuff today that, you know, that's not my thing. Okay, Rich will tell you, yeah, no, that's not his thing. But when you live in one of these things, it has to become your thing. And I'll just tell you one thing, we'll close out. I'm in a nice park. I had only seen this park last time I was in this town. And I was pulling back onto I-10, and I looked over and said, oh, look at that. I'd always stayed at a little KOA here in the area. And when I tried to make reservations, I couldn't. This thing's too big. The KOA is a really little park. It's a very, very small park. And so I remembered this place, and I called them up. Real nice folks, real nice park. This will be where I'll be staying when I come through this area in the future. But I'm parked next to an older couple, and when you face the challenges of the RV life, it gives a sense of community. And so everybody talks to everybody else. And so I was talking to my next door neighbor. And it was because he had come out, had a little dog, going for a walk. And I like to greet all the little animals, find out what their names are, do that kind of thing. Because I'm missing mine. You can't see it. It says, life is better with a tortie. And see, I've got my little, see, there you go. Because Sophie's at home and I'm not going to get to feel her get a Sophie bunk. When she wants attention, she just walks up to you and goes, thunk, just head first, face first, bunk, right into your leg. It's like, okay, I'm here, go for it. And so I'm not going to be feeling any Sophie bonks for a few weeks and getting any Sophie flops where she flops on her side and you've got about 3 seconds to pet her belly, then get your hand out of there or you'll draw back a bloody stump. She's special. Anyway, I was greeting his animal, and I started talking to him, and he was complaining about he's got a leak going in his unit and stuff. And he looked over at my unit and he goes, man. And he named the name of the unit, and he said, we looked into them. He said, we would just love to have one of those. But he says, I need a self-contained unit. I'm old enough that I really can't do the truck thing and stuff like that anymore. He said, top two or three of the units that we looked at that were just the best made, best floor plans, And he's looking at mine going, ah, that's nice. And it is. It is. And I can't go into all the details, but we stole this thing in the sense that it's used, 4 years old, but this is its first use. It was lived in for 6 months, but it never went anywhere. It went across the valley in Phoenix and back, and that was it. So I figured it had maybe 80 miles on it. And I've now put 800-900 on it in 3 days. So we got this thing at an incredibly good used price, but it's basically a new unit. And my next door neighbor was going, wow, they're believers. And they're like, the wife was listening. She goes, Jesus must love you. I was like, okay, I'll take that. I know he does. I'd never really thought of it this way, but yeah, I would agree. The Lord has been very kind to us. So we're doing I'm certainly doing my best to take care of it and repair little things as I can go along. And we're just thankful to be able to use it and continue to move forward. We're looking at more possibilities of debates. Man, we are definitely on track to try to get to 200. And I'll be honest with you, I don't know what the state of this nation is going to be after November of this year. So between now and then, we're going to be on the road. We're going to get stuff done and press on. And that's what I feel we're called to do. So thanks for watching this in delay. I apologize again for the crash. Didn't even see it happening. Everything had worked fine beforehand. That's always how it works. But then things die. So there you go. So I'm not overly concerned about being all fancy dancy here as we get out because we're only recording this anyways. But let's start it and say we will see you next time on The Dividing Line. Thank you so much for watching, and God bless.